Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
Every so often, during an election campaign, there are issues that don't have to be issues. These come from policies that already work pretty well or laws that don't need to be passed. But they become issues because one party or another simply cannot be clear about this subject. And the other parties take that as a sign that they must be hiding something. And presto, you have a wedge issue. So when conservative leader Erin O'Toole was asked recently about literally a single, fairly bland but ambiguous sentence in his party's healthcare platform, and then did not explain exactly what it meant, even when asked repeatedly, well, down the rabbit hole we went. But this particular rabbit hole regarding conscience rights that allow healthcare professionals to refuse to provide certain services could very well lead to a worthwhile discussion on just how these rights can or should be exercised. And it may also force Erin O'Toole to come out and follow up his vocal support for LGBTQ Canadians with some actual concrete policy. Policy that his base may not like very much. And so, an issue that maybe didn't need to be an issue could be, with 3+ weeks to go in this campaign, a pretty useful issue indeed. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Justin Ling is a writer and an investigative reporter. He dug into conscience rights for McLeans. I just them.
Hey, Jordan, how's it going?
It's going really well. I want to thank you first for writing about this topic because I think I'm not alone in misunderstanding how conscience rights are used in Canada. So can you first explain just what they are and where they came from, maybe?
Right. So conscience rights has been an idea that's been around for some time. They are a bit of a murky area of healthcare. They basically recognize that there will be doctors and nurses and healthcare providers who might not feel comfortable offering certain types of services. Now, historically, this has obviously applied mostly to abortion access. There are doctors, especially over the last number of decades, who want to help people, who want to provide healthcare, but who, due to their religious or moral beliefs, just cannot rationalize providing abortion access, and therefore, won't do it, won't refer people to it, won't provide even sometimes aftercare or precare or so on and so forth. And it has been difficult. It's been difficult for a lot of women, I think, particularly to sort of navigate that. In the U.S. in particular, those conscience rights have been used as a general tool to limit access to abortion on sort of a broad basis. So that's why you've also seen sort of a pushback in the opposite direction in the last few decades, an effort to sort of better define when you get to actually invoke those conscience rights, to better define what obligation doctors do have to their patients, whether or not they have to refer them to somebody who will offer the services that are being sought. And you generally have seen, I think, a relatively good balance happening. It's largely now governed by professional bodies, at least here in Canada, on the provincial level. There are good limitations and explanations about when, how, and why you can refuse service and what obligation you still have as a doctor to, say, refer them to someone who will offer that service. And, there's something to be said for the fact that the status quo is okay right now. It's maybe not perfect. It's not going to make everyone happy, but we're in a relatively good spot where doctors can deny certain services, but not, without any exceptions whatsoever.
How varied can these rights be from province to province? And
how wide, I guess, can the services that various health professionals are allowed to refuse to provide be? You know, abortion's obviously an easy one. Where are the limits?
Yeah, and I mean, truth be told, I think this is an area of healthcare that is still to some degree untested. The language in a lot of the provincial governance bodies for healthcare providers is fairly specific in terms of, beliefs have to be well-founded, have to be genuine, have to be moral, have to be religious, and that you, generally speaking, have to refer those patients to another doctor if you refuse to do it. But I think by and large, they haven't been tested. There has been a few court cases across the country where this has come up. The courts have generally sort of put some guidelines around this, you know, requiring that referral happens. But you only have to look to places like New Brunswick, where abortion access has been incredibly difficult and thorny for many years, to realize that it is still very possible for healthcare bodies to find ways to not offer services or to find ways to deny general access to service, without too much pushback from governments or from the courts. And I should say that by and large, over the past many decades, abortion has been the big issue here. But in the last number of years, medical assistance in dying has become another huge issue facing doctors and advocates. There has been a number of groups, particularly religious evangelical groups, who have insisted that conscience rights have to be baked into any sort of law or regulation around medical assistance in dying. Because in particular, there are doctors out there who believe medical assistance in dying not only kind of offends their moral and religious beliefs, but counteracts their oath to help people, counteracts their oath to do no harm, as it were, the Hippocratic Oath. Mm-hmm. So certainly it's a thornier issue, and it's one where I think there's a lot more nuance to be had. And you actually did see the federal government, when they first introduced legislation on medical assistance in dying, actually bake in a little bit of language to the preamble of the bill that said nothing in this bill can kind of override individuals' religious or moral beliefs. So you've seen a little bit of a widening, I think, of when and how these conscience rights can be applied. But it still has been a relatively minor area of healthcare and a relatively uncommon thing to see applied.
Can you explain why conscience rights could still be a problem even though doctors are required to refer patients to somebody who will provide those services?
So this obligation to refer is incredibly important. It is roughly the status quo, right? Generally speaking, in the provinces where there is a broad conscience rights protections, doctors generally have to refer those patients they're turning away to someone else who will provide that same service. But if you remove that piece, you're in real trouble. When one conservative MLA in Alberta tabled a bill to enshrine conscience rights in Albertan law, he actually did so without any sort of acknowledgement of the obligation to refer. And that's a really worrying thing, because suddenly if you're able to sort of shut the door on people and not tell them where else they can go or not give them a referral, then they really are out in the cold. You know, they really do lack basic healthcare at this point. And in some cases, you know, if you're the only doctor in town, or if you're the only doctor who's providing, that service, or if that person needs a referral to get into a certain clinic or to get into a certain service, if you're not providing that referral, that is a really dangerous precedent. And again, especially in places where there's not a general access to healthcare anyway. Luckily, that bill in Alberta did not become law. It was abandoned. But if you were to codify these conscience rights without enshrining that obligation to refer, that could be a really, really dangerous thing. Even in circumstances where you do have to refer, there is, you know, still worries that you might refer them to a doctor who's too far away. You might refer them to a doctor who doesn't even know how to provide those services. There's still a worry that even with a referral, you're in a tough spot. Again, somewhere like New Brunswick, where there really is no access to abortion services, at least in most of the province, you know, referring someone to the doctor down the street might not do much good because they still can't provide the service you need. So the obligation to refer is incredibly important, but it's if any sort of conscience rights legislation or language has to include it, but it is not an absolute failsafe. It won't absolutely ensure that you know, this sort of language would stop discrimination and would prohibit outright denial of service.
So the issue is nuanced, and also there's an acceptable status quo. But of course, this is a federal election campaign, and now we're talking about it. So what's behind that?
Right. So, you know, it wasn't something I think anybody anticipated coming up on the election campaign, but it's a bit of language that's tucked inside the conservative platform that basically says that Erin O'Toole will protect the conscience rights of doctors and nurses in the healthcare space. It sounds sort of innocuous when you first read it, and maybe it is, but the reality is it's so vague and so boilerplate, but also potentially so sort of grand in its ambitions that you know, people started asking questions. You know, what does this mean? What conscience rights would you protect? Would you widen the status quo? Would you overrule what the provincial regulatory bodies and associations say? You know, would you remove that requirement that doctors have to still refer patients to another doctor if they can't provide that service? And these are the sort of questions that started bubbling up. When, of course, this conversation began, the Liberals seized on this and very quickly tried to make it a campaign issue and tried to make it an issue about Erin O'Toole limiting access to abortion. Naturally, that led to journalists asking Erin O'Toole these questions at campaign events. And largely, the question did turn on the issue of abortion. Erin O'Toole's response again and again and again was, I'm pro-choice. I believe in a women's right to choose, but I also believe in conscience rights. So it's really hard to parse what exactly that means. Erin O'Toole and the Conservative Party will not specify what exactly they mean by any of this. I've asked them. I haven't gotten a response. We've tried to kind of pin them down on whether or not this is sort of just a value statement, whether or not just in general Erin O'Toole believes in conscience rights, whether he means he only wants to beef up the language in the Medical Assistance and Dying Bill, or whether this would result in a more grand piece of legislation, whether or not he believes the federal government should create a bill, a law, to enshrine, codify, and expand conscience rights on a very broad basis. Now, if that's what happens, there is real concerns about what that means in real terms. It really would mean, I think, a restriction, a regression of abortion access in parts of the country. I think it would, you know, as you mentioned earlier, potentially engage issues around transplants. It's not hard to imagine some other kind of far-off hypotheticals. A healthcare professional who's a Jehovah's Witness refusing to do a blood transfusion because it offends their religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. A very religious evangelical doctor refusing to use a drug that's derived from stem cells. There has recently been some religious objection to the COVID-19 vaccines because to some degree, in the early stages, some of the vaccines were derived from cells that were sort of derived from abortion. Maybe that's a little overstated, but suffice it to say, you know, there's a lot of places in healthcare where you can find a religious objection to things. If you, as the federal government, are putting that into law and putting basically big walls around those supposed rights, you can get into a spot where suddenly certain aspects of healthcare are harder to, and harder to find, or you start to see doctors turning away patients that they just sort of don't like or don't agree with on a moral basis. And in particular, I think we should be really worried about this when it comes to access to healthcare for transgender people.
Right.
We already know, thanks to study after study after study, that trans people, especially trans youth, have woefully inadequate healthcare. They are already being turned away by some healthcare professionals. They are already misunderstood by many doctors and nurses and others who don't understand the particular kind of nuances of healthcare for trans people. So the idea that you would bake in something into law that would sort of protect anyone who decides they want to turn away a trans person from a hospital or a clinic, that is a really dangerous proposition. And if that's what Aaron O'Toole wants to do, he should really say so, because that's a debate we ought to have. Instead, he sort of sidestepped the question. I've asked the party and his spokespeople three different times and have never gotten a clear response. And I think it's really incumbent on them to sort of say what they want to do.
Well, this is one of the reasons I'm glad we're talking to you about this, because in the bigger picture, there's a question here of O'Toole, who, you know, on the record has been extremely supportive about LGBTQ issues, extremely supportive of the community, but also obviously has a fine line to walk, because there's, in reality, a significant chunk of his base that is not that supportive. And is that why he's just refusing to give clarity here?
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be it. I mean, it's undeniable that there's a significant portion of his base, including a significant portion of Conservative Party members who helped him get elected, who are obsessed with these issues, whose, you know, purpose and motivation in politics is to limit access to abortion, to discourage abortion, to in some cases limit healthcare and you know, basic protections for transgender people, who believe that there needs to be a more aggressive focus on the rights of religious people in Canada. And these people, I don't think, are a majority of his party. I'm not even sure that they're a sizable plurality. I think there are certainly a lot of social conservatives in his party who are much more moderate, who don't necessarily need these issues to be front and center. But this really vocal minority, you know, who are now running lobby groups advocating for these conscience rights, I think he is worried about offending them, to be totally honest. I think he's worried about getting antagonized from within his own party from the right. I think he's worried about the rising popularity of someone like Maxime Bernier, of someone like Derek Sloan, of a group like the Maverick Party out west. And I think he's, despite his own personal beliefs, which are clearly in line with the majority of the country, which are clearly supportive of a woman's right to choose, clearly supportive of LGBTQ people, I think he is trying to sort of play both sides to a large degree. And it's frustrating. You know, it's very, very frustrating. I can tell you that the conscience rights group that he seems to be listening to most, the group that has advocated for exactly this sort of language in party platforms, well, this group is also vocally against a bill to ban conversion therapy for queer youth, a bill, you know, that would just protect queer, especially trans youth, from being essentially psychologically tortured. And again, Aaron O'Toole supports that bill. You know, this group opposes it. So it's really sort of awkward to watch him sort of play defense for a vocal minority of his own party that he doesn't even seem to agree with. And evidently, I think it comes down to electoral strategy. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that women in this country, the queer people in this country, the trans people in this country are tired of being sort of electoral chess pieces in this way. And I think it kind of goes into the same reason why these groups are consistently skeptical and unfriendly to the Conservative Party. Because even when someone like Aaron O'Toole says and does all the right things 90% of the time, that other 10%, you're left wondering, you know, if push comes to shove, will I get thrown overboard?
Is this going to be something, cynical or not, because there's certainly room for a claim that it's cynical, that Trudeau and the Liberals are going to try hard to turn into a wedge issue as this goes on?
I think absolutely. I mean, I think that the liberals need this, right? I mean, and it's not as though the liberals are consistent and incredible champions for abortion access or for LGBTQ people. You know, it took the looming election campaign for Justin Trudeau to finally start putting pressure on New Brunswick to open up abortion access and to finally get on board with, you know, with women's rights to access abortion and related services. You know, yes, the Trudeau government tabled legislation to end conversion therapy, but they didn't prioritize it, and it died when he called an election. So, you know, they're going to use this as a wedge, but in the most cynical way possible. And again, you want to talk about being used as a pawn. I think that accusation is very valid against the Liberal Party. You know, they spent years promising to end the blood ban, as we've talked about on the show before, the blood ban for gay men. They even took a massive amount of money from queer people promising to do that. They got into government and they didn't do it. So, you know, I think there's so much cynical politics at play here that it's very frustrating to watch. And, you know, I think the best outcome here would be to finally hear Erin O'Toole clarify what he wants and what he really believes here. Because if Erin O'Toole came out tomorrow and said, I believe in conscience rights, but I believe in codifying what is the status quo across the country and giving a national standard, one where a doctor can only refuse services in X, Y, and Z scenarios, and they have to provide a referral to a doctor who will provide that care. I think a lot of people would say, that's fine. You know, maybe we can debate about the fringes of what that policy exactly means, but I think a lot of people would say, I'm okay with that. I'm comfortable with that. Certainly, if he came out and said, I believe in conscience rights, but I'll only legislate it for medical assistance in dying, I think a lot of people would say, that's great. That's a totally rational, okay policy that I'm comfortable with. But as long as he remains vague, as long as he refuses to clarify what he wants or what he believes or what he'll actually do, I think there's going to be a lot of anxiety from people who will not be able to go vote for him and who will remain terrified if he wins. Because for a lot of trans people in particular, they have fought so long and so hard to get basic health care, to get basic human rights protections. The prospect that Erin O'Toole could win government and that could start to slowly erode, that is a really scary, a really frustrating, and a really worrying prospect for a lot of people.
I hope we learn one way or another what he plans to do. Justin, thank you for this.
Thanks, Jordan.
Justin Ling, writing about conscience rights in Maclean's. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can find all our episodes there. You can talk to us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. You can email us. We are at TheBigStoryPodcast, all one word, at rci.rogers.com. And of course, we're in your favorite podcast player, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, doesn't matter. Find us there. We'll be waiting for you. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.